This episode of our This Week in XR podcast is sponsored by Zapper. Zapper is one of the world's leading XR companies. Over the past 12 years, they've won numerous awards for memorable campaigns. They've democratized AR by making tools and SDKs that anyone can use. And they created Zapbox, the world's most affordable mixed reality headset. Most recently, Zapper worked with Unilever to create an enhanced QR code called Accessible QR, which enables packaged goods to speak to the blind and partially sighted. If you're thinking XR, give the team at Zapper a call or visit zapper.com to see how they can help you on your XR journey. Good morning, everybody. I'm Charlie Fink with Ted Shilowitz and Roni Abovitz. It's This Week in XR for March 29th, 2024. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Our guest today is Liz Hyman of the XR Association. That is the company that represents in Washington, D.C., all of the big companies like Meta and Google and Amazon and so forth. So she's got a great perspective, talks to everybody. So we'll look forward to interviewing her in a little while after we banter about the news.
Yeah, starting, should be a good show.
Yeah, starting with Amazon. Invested $1.25 billion in Anthropic last year. They had an option to invest another $2.75 billion, and they did it. Mm-hmm. So it looks like Anthropic is going to be Amazon's horse in the race with Google and Microsoft. And it is truly incredible the way the big companies have stepped up. I think they're the only ones who really could, the amount of capital it's taking right now to create AI models and run them. It makes sense that the companies that have big hosting operations like AWS, Google Cloud, and Microsoft. So $4 billion is a heck of a lot of money.
Well, I think a lot of that, Charlie, is going right back, right? It's going like, it's basically like money to buy $3 billion worth of AWS hosting, you know?
Yes.
I would ask Roni this, and Roni, you know, you have this perspective around mixed reality as well in terms of overcapitalization, right? And organic growth versus strategic push growth. Do you think, like, with the dollars that are being put into these sectors, how much of this will actually turn into a valid return on investment? I get there's something in the back that my sort of spider sense tries to kick up when there's so much money being put into this kind of like chase the rabbit situation, because everybody knows what happened last time with the internet, right? But last time with the internet, people forget there was organic growth that moved over extended periods of time into billion-dollar investments, as opposed to instantaneous throw money at the wall. So I feel like there's a change in the wind. And a lot of these people, and there's an akin to the entertainment business, all having to chase the Netflix model, right? And we've seen how that turned out. So I'm curious if you have a perspective on it, because I think
Well, let me give you guys a perspective, and obviously I'm biased because I'm running.
You're in it. Yeah,
I'm in it. But here's my perspective on the bias. I think the massive capital in AI, first of all, a lot of it is self-serving. So the reasoning it's being allocated is it's going back and funding Azure and AWS and Google Compute, which shows up on their public company revenues. So there's a little bit of that. The other piece is I think they're all convinced that their system architecture is the way forward. And even though it's very powerful, I'm completely not convinced that is the way forward, because companies are not adopting their methodology at scale.
Right. I guess that's my end game point, is that
Look at the science project, and then what I actually want in a company or as an individual, and I won't go through the details here, but there's like a laundry list of mismatch.
Yeah, they're a little at odds.
The mismatch of what you want as a human and what I need in my complex, very finely tuned organization, and you want to bring this alien thing in there. There's a massive discordance. So despite the showcase of power, what I really want in my company and what they're building may not match. So I think we're going to see gigantic messes, but eventually things are going to bust through. And I'm a huge believer AI will change almost everything in industry. Mm. But the question is, are these systems the ones to do it? Because here's the other thing. A lot of them are being run by people whose primary job was to run science projects in the back room of Microsoft at Google that have PhDs and are really smart at math and really like to burn tons of capital using a bunch of computers to do experiments, whose prime output was to write a paper. All of a sudden, when you're told your prime output is not write a paper, but to generate commercial cash flow, interact with human beings, and know that human beings have many different kinds of issues other than, I don't think we should all be replaced by your big AI system. There's like all this friction happening. So Ted, I think it's a little bit different than the XR world, but there's the similarity is, I love the energy coming into this space. I do worry about like too many lemming-like investors not thinking too deeply and just going, oh, you're on the attention paper. Let me give you $1 billion. Mm-hmm. Not like, is your business plan making any sense?
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, that's
we can do an entire episode on.
No, that's valid. That's essentially my way of thinking too. We're very much aligned on it. Yeah,
that's awesome. An
interesting other story that is related to this: Databricks, also an AI company, research company that's raised a lot of money. They have an open source model that now exceeds Llama 2 and Mistral's Mixtral. Here's the thing: it's called DBRX, and the whole model was produced for $10 million. Mm-hmm. Which is a fraction of what the other large language models cost to create and program. You're shaking your head, Ronnie. What does that mean?
Well, no, I was going to say we should shout out to David at just went blank. David, who is building the cheese.
He's gonna Google it to save himself.
You have to edit this. You have to edit this part out. just went totally blank this morning, even though I had coffee. No, it's David Holtz from.
We'll edit this. I'll flag this for Lauren to edit.
Oh, Lauren, definitely at Midjourney. Sorry.
Oh, Midjourney.
So, let's redo from this part. We need to mention David Holtz from Midjourney, who basically built this company that's generating a huge amount of revenue at very low cost from nothing. He had took no investors.
Yeah. Why is it so low cost? Because it does an awful lot of fantastic image generation.
Well, I think there's an issue there, and there's an issue with all of these players, including the ones that are very well funded, which is I think there's a feeling in the field that you have an eminent right to all the data on the internet, which is not true. Mm-hmm. And when the copyright wars finally subside here and the trademark wars and the patent wars, I think what you'll have is this like shift like we saw in music from, you know, you'll have a Spotify emerge, you'll have an iTunes emerge. But I think we're still in the Napster days. I think actually we're very much in the Napster days where companies feel like they have a right to everything. It's all thrown into a blender, so I didn't have to pay for the ingredients. That's a problem. So I think some of the cost has to do with grabbing a bunch of open source tarballs, and there's a ton of them out there, and then using the equations and math that are all open source, that gets you pretty far, but there's some issues. And some of those issues are like, once you unravel the copyright, trademark, and patent things, what's left? That's a different problem.
I also think there's an interesting underlying discussion about the Databricks and Databricks open source philosophy. It's a bit like Linux versus Windows versus Mac OS versus Android, right? And is Databricks the Linux of AI, and will they survive as a business? To your earlier point, who gets the chemistry right? And is this time different than a computer operating system? And will Databricks not just survive, but thrive? And will the OpenAI stuff curve out because of its overwhelming spend and will they find the right chemistry? So I think Databricks is an interesting one to keep an eye on.
Meanwhile, the internet is asking today if OpenAI is going to be the first privately held $1 trillion company.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting after becoming a $1 trillion company to see their trajectory go awry.
Yeah.
So a couple of other stories worth mentioning. Sora, again, in the news. Bloomberg broke that they're in L.A. meeting with Hollywood types.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same story all the time with Sora. They did release some new videos, including one from Shy Kids, which is a filmmaking group in Canada. They did one based on a man with a balloon. It's called Balloon Head. And it's a guy who has a yellow balloon as a head. And it is a wonderful film. They're good storytellers. And the kind of magic that you get, the unexpected magic that you get from AI, you know, they said, we don't think AI is there to replicate reality. It's there to be surreal. And I thought that was a really interesting insight about it.
Well, here's some interesting perspective, I guess, Charlie, from one of those Hollywood types, which I guess I would be considered one of those.
You are, Ted.
I was having a lunch with another one of my Hollywood type friends, and I was showing him some stuff because he wasn't as quite as up on it as I was on this Sora stuff. And I said, look, here's an interesting perspective. Think about the money we used to spend shooting aerials when we had to fly real helicopters around. Think about how we did a cost-cutting measure when we realized we could effectively do almost every aerial with drones and remote cinematography now, and we basically chopped about 80% of that cost away. Now think about the last 20% of that. You will theoretically, and I showed him some examples, unless you really want to do the organic version, you'll almost never have to shoot an aerial again for that sort of feeder material that, you know, in any sort of dramatic movie or mystery movie where they have the cutaway of the big, you know, the car driving down the road and in the forest, right? Or yeah, the big sweeping scenery of New York City or Tokyo or whatever it is. Pretty much all of that today, here we are, mid-2024, can be effectively replaced through a lens of what we call cinema with a computer prompt, right? I need turn of the century, Budapest, dark and moody, blah, 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 and boom, there it is, right? Now, again, we've all often talked, there is a compute cost for that, and someone eventually will have to pay for that compute cost, but it's definitely less than flying a real helicopter to do that shot, and definitely less than even flying a drone to do that shot. So that part of the entertainment sector will be overtaken, I believe, by this computer technology.
Can I make a prediction for us here? Let's just transport to this week in XR 2035.
Yeah,
you know, about a decade. Hopefully, we're all still doing this. But 2035, and hopefully, what I'm doing is in full bloom by then. 2035, a kid in a garage is sitting down, and they can make their own Jurassic Park series with maybe a couple $1,000 budget from their parents.
Yeah,
I they think make it's that much series, and it looks as good as the full Jurassic Park series. And then that kid could like drop that into Netflix or other things.
Let me make a counter prediction.
Some excellent stuff. What's the counter
prediction? The counter prediction, which is when the iPhone 10 or 12 came out, Apple started running videos on people using it to make movies. And they predicted that there would be dozens of Hollywood films shot on the iPhone. There's been exactly one. And that one was picked up at a film festival. It wasn't made as a professional Hollywood film, although it's wonderful, Tangerine. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend it. But the point is there have been a zillion TikTok videos and one movie, right? A movie is a very discrete thing. And so I am not convinced that a kid can create a movie. I am convinced you'll have kids creating things on TikTok and not 10 years from now, but 10 months from now that are going to be unbelievable, mind-blowing.
TikTok thing, yes.
Blow our minds, but yeah. I don't know whether it's going to be a whole movie. I think that is, we've seen that, we've heard that before. It's really freaking hard to make a movie. And it's not just a matter of technology. It's a matter of maturity. It's a matter anything else is a fluke. Flukes are possible.
But Charlie, you're talking about the mental state of someone, not the technical capability. You're saying the mental state of people leans at short form, instant TikToks. I think you're right about that. But I will say this, some of will elevate out of that ocean of TikToks, and maybe we'll find those deeper thinkers with long form narrative and more to say.
Sure.
And
I'm young Steven Spielberg made and edited 16mm films. And right. There's no doubt the next or the Spielberg of the coming generations will master AI.
But most people will be in the ocean of TikTok-y things. Yes. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. And I have a bit of a hybrid synthesized version of that because you're both right. And the reason why we know you're right is because we already have a proof point called YouTube that has shown us the way.
Exactly.
And the way is that there will be exponentially more content of all forms created by using this technology. Already we have, 500 plus hours a minute being uploaded to YouTube, and the percentage of people that actually make a living on YouTube is extraordinarily tiny compared to the people that are trying to make a living on YouTube or just putting stuff out there because they think it's fun. And we already have that modern Steven Spielberg. In fact, there are many of them, but the one I'll call out is a director named Neil Blomkamp, who started out in his basement with, you know, Adobe tools, got the attention of Peter Jackson, and made some significant movies.
Yes, he has. So
that next level, to your point about the things that Sora was showing, these artists that are creating things because it's a tool set for them, there will be the next Oscar-winning moment of that director that came from that age, just like Steven Spielberg came from the cutting Super 8 movies in his, you know, parents' basement, and Neil sat on computers working in After Effects and Cinema 4D, and today, in the mid-2020s, we've got kids working in AI. So when you can look backwards, as we all know, we can extrapolate forwards, and there is no question that these kinds of things are going to be short form, medium form, and long form, and come from these creators. 100% yes.
So let's bring in Liz. Haven't spoken to her since we see her every year at AWE. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in what's going on, especially relevant is AI to these big companies we're talking about. Liz, hello.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good, nice to see you.
Do you know Roni? I don't know whether you guys have ever met.
I've never had the pleasure of meeting Roni. I've been down to Florida, but it's exciting to meet you. So
great meeting you, Liz.
Yeah, indeed. And good to see you, Ted. How's it going?
Me too. Things are good.
One of these days, we'll have to actually do this in person.
We would be thrilled. Charlie and I are in the same relative geography. So
fabulous.
I know you're in LA a lot. And of course, we have AWE coming up at Long Beach, and we always convene there and review the year and talk about the future. So,
oh, fantastic. Yeah, I'll be out there for sure. So looking forward to it. Yeah.
I have a bunch of questions for you, but today we're going to do it right. We usually jump into the middle of the conversation and then we rewind saying, oh, wait, people don't know Liz. They don't know what the XRA is. So let's start out right and say, tell us about the XRA and what you do for the immersive industry.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. And I was thinking about it as I was getting on, because you guys do such a wonderful roundup of like what the business is, but also like the knowledge that you all bring in terms of the technology. And sometimes the outside world are going to say that you guys are the nerds, but I think I'm the nerd in this conversation. So here we go. XR Association, we're a nonprofit industry trade association. So what the heck does that mean? So companies come together to become members of our organization so that we can sort of put our individual company hats aside and think about what's good for the industry from the world that we're operating in. And there's two places that we kind of weigh in. One is with public policy. So, you know, a lot of what happens in an industry is going to relate to or have implications from what Congress does, what, you know, the parliaments around the world do, what executive agencies do. And so our job in a large measure is to educate policymakers about the technology. You know, it's an emerging tech, so they need to know, like, how does it work? What does it mean? How is it used? Where is it going to be used? So that they have a little better understanding so that when it becomes a more ubiquitous technology, this isn't a surprise, and you know, they're able to really think through some of the challenges and opportunities that it presents. So that's one major focus of what we do. The other major focus is research and best practices. So we want to make sure that we as an industry are really thinking through some of these things and raising our own bar for what we do. And so we've put out, for example, a series of developer guides of best practices. So our first chapter was done looking at sort of safety and ergonomics of particularly virtual reality. At that time, that was the leading indicator. And then more recently, like, for example, we just put out a chapter on healthcare and XR and, you know, how do you think about developing good, positive applications in the healthcare sector? We did it in education. I'd say one of the most impactful developer guides that we did was around accessibility and really thinking through how do we make our technology accessible from the beginning as best as possible. As we work through some of the challenges of the hardware, there's certainly a lot that can be done on the software side to make it more accessible. So that's a rambling answer. And then lastly, it's just like, hey, how can we go about promoting this technology and sharing it with the general public that it's a cool thing?
And for all of our listeners around the world, how is the organization funded? Is it privately funded, publicly funded? You know, is there government sort of involved in it? Can people that are working in XR or aspire to join it? Does it cost money to join it? Give us the nuts and bolts of the organization.
Yeah. Right to the point, huh, Ted?
Why not? We've been each other a long time.
So, I was going to get there through the back door, but...
yeah.
I just went right through the front door.
Better to be totally through the front door. Look, like all industry trade associations of our type, right? We are a member company organization. So companies pay dues to participate in our organization. And that is our primary funding source. We also do like some sponsorships and, you know, if we can figure out some other ways to generate revenue, we're gonna, because it's not cheap what we do, you know, in terms of making sure that we have the right professionals involved that understand, you know, some of these policy and political venues that we're talking about. Sorry about that.
You're based in Washington, D.C., yes?
Based in Washington, D.C. And in fact, for our member companies, just to give you a sense of how it works, we're going to have them come visit us in D.C. in a few weeks, and our member companies will be able to demo their products on Capitol Hill. So we've arranged for that opportunity, because you guys know, like I do, that's how you teach people what this means, is to put them in a headset or in an immersive experience and let them understand what this means to society and to industry and to all the different sectors. So, yeah.
And are the big boys part of the association? Meta, Apple, Nvidia, Google.
Interestingly, of course, all those companies that you just mentioned, Ted, have their own lobbying operations.
Absolutely, they do. That's kind of why I'm asking the question. Yeah.
Correct. So not all of them, to be candid, but many of them are part of our organization, and we're open for them to join us as well. So, you know, we'd love to see that. But we also have a lot of really interesting small and medium-sized companies that are incredible in terms of, you know,
well, I think that's the sweet spot, right? That's the companies that need your help. The Metas and Apples can benefit from it, but they probably don't need your help, or at least they would say they won't. But medium-sized companies absolutely need someone to work in their best interest as a nonprofit.
So. Correct. And it takes everybody, all different perspectives, coming to the table to sort of get that, you know, brew, if you will, to help us to understand where things are going, how they're being developed. We, as an industry trade association staff, we benefit from the input of our members. We learn from them. We communicate that out to audiences that they might not usually interact with. But yeah, I mean, we have some really cool companies like MetaView recently joined. I don't know if you guys have talked at all about them and their AR application for helping to do guided needle insertion. That's something that the FDA.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah. I remember them. I'm thinking of Accuvane.
Same thing.
They have a little reader that runs along your arm and finds the vein.
Exactly.
Anybody who's been stuck repeatedly while they try and get a needle in you knows that would be an extremely valuable piece of technology.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you real stories from my real life.
Sadly, I'm skittish about giving blood for all the reasons that you just put.
I look away. I don't need to see my blood draining out of my arm at that volume.
Agreed. So, but yeah, I mean, MetaView is cool. Transfer has been an awesome company. They're really focused on workforce training and how the technology is revolutionizing that conversation. So I could go on and on.
I have a political question for you. I guess it's political. So, you know, we have the infrastructure bill that's passed that's supposed to be promoting, among other things, technology. And you have a problem in the industry, which is we all expect it at this point, and I've been covering this for almost 10 years, and I can tell you this has been a theme since the beginning, is the adoption of assisted and augmented reality in the workplace, particularly for frontline workers. And this was something Microsoft struggled with mightily and ultimately has dialed back their efforts because it's too hard. Because while industry, particularly big, heavy industry, is willing to experiment, they're still a long way away from buying tens of thousands of headsets for their workers. So is the infrastructure bill going to offer any help to this industry in that regard? Because I think this has been, honestly, it is devastating the small companies in the XR space who can't afford losses, who can't afford to say, okay, maybe we were on a 20-year trajectory for the development of this industry, not a 10-year or a 5-year trajectory as we believed in the mid-aughts 10 years ago. But a lot of these companies are going to go out of business, yeah. I think, and a few of them already have. So are we going to get some help there?
Yeah, a great question. I mean, the infrastructure bill is not quite where it all sits, I think. I mean, there's broadband dollars and things like that that absolutely will help. And sort of flipping it back a little, Charlie, to what role we play. So let me go back about five years ago when Senator Schumer started with the Endless Frontier Act. I don't know if you remember that, but it was created primarily to address U.S.-China competition and to make sure that we were focused on emerging technologies and nurturing them. And we took a look at it, and immersive technology wasn't in there. So we called up Senator Schumer's office, and we said, hey, wait a second, you need to include immersive technology. And long story short, it ultimately became the CHIPS and Science bill, okay? And there's two sides of it. CHIPS is all about semiconductors, science is R&D. And we were able to get immersive technology included in the list of critical technologies that should be considered for that science side of the bill, okay? Now, money is starting to go on the chip side. It's not going with equal measure on the science side. And so we need to make sure that we stay focused on that and that that is somehow going to help lift up these emerging technology companies that you talk about. The other thing that our team, particularly Joan O'Hara, who leads our policy efforts, wanted to continue with that conversation was, if you look at how other countries are approaching immersive technologies, right? China certainly, but also the EU in general, South Korea, UK, they're very deliberate and supportive of nurturing XR. They have specific plans and approaches. And in fact, we did a white paper called Reality Check. It came out around November of last year. And in it, we do a very detailed, we partnered with George Washington University and their digital data hub and came up with a lot of research about what all these other regions and countries are doing. And then we concluded that, you know, chips and science is great. By the way, XR has been named as a critical technology in other realms of the government, but we do need to be a little more intentional about how we support things. And so we came up with a bunch of recommendations that are in the paper, but they, you know, include, for example, maybe coming up with a test bed for digital twins in the federal government so that it's not just the private sector, but the government is starting to understand, say, at FEMA, for example, could they build a digital twin to better understand the impact of climate change and sustainability? That might be a great use. So we're working now to try to see if we can get some legislation around that. And are there other ways to coordinate the federal government and agencies to think more holistically about immersive technology? So again, forgive me for being so long-winded to your question, but I think that's, you know, a roundabout way of saying there's a lot more that we can and should be doing that ultimately will help. But I will finish this diatribe by saying, as you know, Washington is slow.
Yeah.
So
can I ask a little bit, seems like I'm the sparky question guy today. A question that is very topical. It is certainly on everybody's mind, and I'm sure, Liz, it's on your mind too. This brouhaha that's going on with Apple right now, and the supposed antitrust or sort of ecosystem argument. Does your organization, does your membership have kind of a stance or a philosophy around that? Because, you know, I'm very Jekyll and Hyde around this. I think mm-hmm. there's part of it that with one sort of theoretical sense sort of makes sense that they want to kind of try and figure this out a little bit from a government perspective. But the other side of me, which is my day-to-day human side, likes my little Apple ecosystem. I think it makes sense for me to stay in my Apple ecosystem. And I don't really care that much about all my Android friends trying to sneak into my party. Like, they have their own party and they should keep running their own party. So I'm very curious if you could probably clearly see where I would fall on this. But I'm very curious what an XR organization or you personally would fall on this. Charlie, you've got a very, very cute smile on your face, Charlie.
No, I mean, this is a big issue. We actually did not cover it as part of the news.
It is a big issue. Yes.
It is a big issue. And Apple has been here before. And before they have kind of gotten away with it, I think the argument is, look, we spent $500 billion building this thing, mm-hmm. you know, over 25 years. So we should be able to charge whatever we want. There's an alternative in the Android world if you don't like it. So
that's my Jekyll and Hyde problem.
I want to hear what Liz has to say. It's a good argument.
Yeah, it's a really good argument if you're in the ecosystem. If you're not and you want to sneak in, it's not such a good argument. But I'm curious. Liz,
I'm going to give you a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde answer, Ted, in the following. So first of all, Apple is not a member of the XR Association, so I should say that up front.
Right, but Meta and Google are, right? So these are interesting. There's very other big companies that are inside it.
So one of the challenges of a trade association is you don't want to – we are governed by antitrust conversations as well, right? When you bring all these companies together – now, all these companies are trying to figure out their business models, Ted. So that's not a place for us as the staff of the trade association to kind of inject ourselves into, right? So not to take a duck here, but we don't really have a position on that issue because so much, it's not just Apple. It's like, how are each of these companies building out their business models around immersive technology? And so we look at things. For example, we did a year-long process. We called it the Future of XR Advisory Council, and we brought together 65 different individuals, you know, from civil society to academia to industry, et cetera, to look at a number of issues. And one of them was interoperability. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you where we came down. So there's a nice little conversation and discussion piece about it. And we initially looked at it because we're like, well, what's the policy side of it? But again, we looked at what the Metaverse Standards Forum is doing. And we were like, you know what? We don't want to muddy the waters. A lot of those conversations are taking place there. So we didn't actually pull out specific recommendations because we feel like that's something that the Metaverse Standards Forum should ultimately be doing. They're pulling all those people together. But what we tried to explain in a very readable format is that, you know, that there are valid arguments on both sides. You're Jekyll and Hyde, right? And certainly there's, in our view, there's going to be a spectrum of openness, and it depends on what world you're talking about. So if it's healthcare, you don't want it wide open, right? You want a closed system. If it's education, you may want it to be a closed system, you know, for various reasons about your students and their privacy and all those things. So not to kind of squirm around this, but our point is we're trying to educate and point out what are the broad spectrum of considerations that people need to think through. I don't think we've gotten to an answer on it as of yet.
There are multiple answers. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I have a couple topics for you, and I'm not sure what side you land in XRA, but I'm working in deep tech AI, so not in XR directly anymore, but I've probably been in it longer than most people. Here's the things I thought were actually the issues that Washington needs to address. And I was surprised that near zero progress was actually made on these two. So One is intellectual property. So it seems that the patent system does not protect smaller companies the way it should. And I've lived that. I could tell you the order of magnitude of IP we built at the company as a small player as the way to protect yourself from the larger companies. So this is not about antitrust. The idea is like the patent office should be part of how you can preserve your inventions and give you, supposed to be 18 to 20 years of an advantage. So that seems no longer true, even the law hasn't changed. What I mean by that is I could read so many claims of what we invented on top of what so many others are doing. And it almost feels like, well, if patents don't matter, and what I mean by this is the way to enforce them, you have to go into these like 10-year battles that take forever against giant companies who will hire five law firms. And at the end of that day, you're drained of all your capital. So there's like a uselessness to the system. So I'm wondering, like, if you really want to protect the inventors, the smaller garage startups from the very large, more predatory companies, patents have to mean something. So that's one. The other one that I was really surprised by, I don't know where XRA sits on this, but these devices are brain-computer interfaces. I started Magic Leap on the theory that it is a brain-computer interface. I came out of med tech, so I'm a biomedical engineer, and I was just very surprised that no one was stepping up in DC to actually own it. Like, is this FDA? Is this OSHA? Is this this? Is this that? Like, you couldn't get an answer from anyone. You can't get clarity. And then you might have people in the XRA who are funding XRA, so you may not have made an answer to this, but like, not all the systems are equal and they have different impact on human beings. What I mean by impact is there's psychological, but there's also neurological, there's physiological impacts. That phones and tablets and PCs, because you use them at a distance, have very light to no impact. There's some psychology of like addiction with like, you know, social media. This is a very different kind of thing. This is like deeper into you. So the potential for addiction and psychology is much, much more intense. But also the fundamental physiologic neural change that you go through wearing these systems. And they're, again, not all equal because some companies take great pains trying to understand that and design for it. So I feel like the standards are not really there, but there's decades of papers published by all kinds of research labs, including military US and around the world, about what extended use in VR and other things meant. And it seems like one of those things that just got ignored. So I came out of an FDA medtech environment and thought that, well, somehow this field would get some framework that differentiated it from building a PC or a laptop or just another piece of software because it's so close. Like, I always thought of it, it has so many medtech-like capabilities. And I don't want people to confuse this with like using XR in healthcare applications, of which I feel there's many. This is actually, what are the healthcare implications at different age groups and of different types of using these devices? And it feels like it's not been studied well. The FDA seems to not be grabbing it. I don't know if it's come up in your world, but those are the two things, the IP more than the antitrust and sort of the health thing. And I never had time to really spend too much time with the X-ray, so I apologize. I know our team.
And we're proud to have Magic
Leap. I think Magic Leap's a member. Yeah, Magic Leap's a member.
They recently joined, so we're thrilled to have them on board. Great question. So let me first say we're a really small team, so we can't boil the ocean.
Yeah, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's Friday morning and the weekend's coming up.
I know, I need more coffee. No.
Yeah.
No, it's all good. Couple things. One, it's funny. I was just sort of thinking about an analogy to patent reform. So the last time patent reform was done was in 2011. It was something called the America Invents Act, and Pat Leahy out of Vermont sort of led the charge. And there were a few things done in that bill, and I can't remember all the details. It's been a while, but that they were focused on how do we make sure that small companies, small individuals are protected through the intellectual property process.
It's not working.
I know.
I can tell you it's not working. Well, being a small company taking on giants, I don't see it working at all.
It was done back in 2011, right? And at the time, everybody was like, oh, well, this this is better than what it was, right? But I think it's probably, you know, one lesson that I think is important, and it's hard to sort of get people's minds around it. You have to keep going back and examining whatever that regulatory framework is and figuring out what worked and what didn't work. And so I think your point is well taken. I confess, we do not focus on a day-to-day basis around IP. It's a very, very technical and specific area. But, you know, I think it's worth the examination. Is the America Invents Act sufficient? What do we need to do to improve on it? I mean, there were a few things. I remember they opened up some PTO offices in regional areas so that it would be easier for local inventors to be able to access the patent process. But, you know, that's sort of window dressing, right? So what are the more specific things that need to be done? And then on your question around research and impact, that's something, for example,
the health and safety piece of this, right?
Yeah, exactly. So coming out of that extract process, the Future of XR Advisory Council, we looked at a few different areas. One was on norms and behavior and immersive spaces, so sort of content moderation discussion around that. We looked at interop, we looked at privacy, we looked at diversity, inclusion, representation, and particularly how that translates in the workforce. But the one I wanted to highlight was youth and, you know, their safety and well-being. And one of the things that we're in the process of doing for our membership is to do some sort of literature survey, like what's out there already. A few years ago, when we looked at this in terms of impact on young people, the physical, physiological, and emotional impact, at the time, there was not a lot there. So we want to take a look and see, you know, has that progressed? And is there information for us to pull up? And I see you put something in the chat, but we're in the process of doing that. And then we want to take that and then use that as the basis of sort of a conversation, and then ultimately do another developer's guide with that information as a resource for what we do and how we think about it. But
Liz, I'll put one thing out there for you, which is you don't have to respond to it, but I think there's tons of papers in all sorts of research journals that are out there that if you had someone on the team to do a literature survey, you'd find like dozens, maybe hundreds. The other thing is that it's not only young people.
Yes.
There was a shift in neuroscience that your brain, people used to think your brain stops developing and it doesn't grow anymore and it stops being neuroplastic at a young age. There are a number of people, including Adam Ghazali at UCSF, that have proven now neuroplasticity is all the way through your entire age. It just has a different rate of change. Sure. That I think is profoundly important for XR, especially as people go from using it for 5 minutes as a demo to what we're seeing people pretend to do on video with Apple Vision Pro. Like, I'm going to use it 8 hours a day.
What does
8 hours a day
duty
every day mean to those few who are actually doing it? And what will happen in the future when lots and lots of people are doing it? There's all kinds of issues, and I hope the XRA can lead creating like the health and safety standards, which is, it's a hard problem. I'm happy to offline with you on it, but like, I feel like the industry will take off if those things are resolved. I think it's still holding us back because those issues are kind of ignored by many companies. Like, let's not look at it, but then users cannot ignore it because it's your body and your body will not ignore it.
Yeah. And maybe that's a great way to sort of get to an endpoint here, which is, our organization, we want to see this technology flourish. And we understand that the way that that happens is people have to have trust and faith in the technology. You're right. There's a big difference between my use, I get in and I work out 3 times a week in Supernatural versus, you know, wearing an Apple Vision Pro for 8 hours a day. I couldn't begin to tell you the differences ultimately. But we are absolutely committed to being, you know, transparent, doing the work as best we can. We're, you know, a team of 8 people, and which sounds like a lot, but at the end of the day, given all the issues that you just talked about,
Teeny tiny.
Exactly. So, you know, we're going to do our best. There are other organizations out there that are also really trying to chip away at some of these conversations. You guys are probably familiar with XRSI and, you know, all kinds of, I mean, I mentioned the Metaverse Standards Forum. So I think there are a number of organizations that are really committed to trying to get to these things. But, you know, we're going to start with young people because we think that's so important. But I take your point about the scope of this and what it means in the long term. But I am excited. I don't know about you guys. I mean, do y'all feel like, yes, last year was sort of the winter and this year maybe we're starting to come through it a little bit?
Charlie and Roni have heard me say this for years. I feel like there's never been a winter, summer, fall, or other. Yeah. I think it is a linear progression of how technology moves through its cycles and people learn how to build new things and create sort of new use cases and new experiences. Charlie and I talk about all the time, the hidden success of XR is in the industrial realm, is in the enterprise realm. And it's valuable, it works for healthcare, it works for heavy and light industry, it works for education, and nobody gets to talk about it enough. From a government standpoint, like when you talk about your work lobbying to get attention and get more sort of logical regulations around things like age restrictions and time in headset and on and ergonomics, like, look, Charlie Roni and I were up on stage at South by Southwest. And by the way, you should watch our session because it's up on video now, right? It was just on audio, but now it's on video. And we talked about how great the Apple device was for a little bit. And then we railed on it. And a lot of what we railed on were the horrifying ergonomics and the weight dynamics and the neck pain that it causes if you don't figure out a way to put some third-party stuff on it to balance the device out. Yeah. And to me, that's a lobbying organization situation where, you know, if you're trying to move something into mass scale, you know, similar as the kind of stuff that government sort of regulation studies around lithium batteries and things that have radioactive signals and things that we do our best, even though it can't be perfect, we try and protect the consumer, right?
Yeah.
No one is thinking about if you're going to put something so heavy and so imbalanced on your face, you better make good on it. You better start to figure that out. That's where your organization fits, in my opinion. You know, it should fight against those giants when the giants are not doing the right things for their consumers.
We were supportive of the Underwriter Laboratories safety standard process. We participated in that. So, you know, and we're always trying to find the right balance, you know, of growth versus, you know, exactly what you said. And we were like feeling our way out as we go forward.
And at the same time, we want organizations that are doing the cutting edge to keep working on the cutting edge. We don't want to thwart. It's just like the airplane, world. Like, yes, actually, we do want supersonic travel, but we'd like the doors to stay on if you don't mind.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. And so I think people are going to, you know, we're getting to lighter, more ergonomic, friendlier devices.
Absolutely.
It's a lot of innovation and, you know, it's coming.
Yeah. So good place to stop. It's been great chatting with you, Liz. We always feel like at the end of these conversations that our guest slot is never long enough. But on the other hand, we try and be kind to our guests and let them, kind to our audience and let them move on to other things. And we're moving on to the weekend. So thank you for coming and hanging out with us. Great to see you.
Thank you so much, guys. And glad to be the nerd on the conversation. So.
All right, Liz, feel free to reach out anytime. We'll see you when you're in Long Beach. But before that, if you're in LA, please come visit.
Definitely.
So that's our show this week. Have a good weekend, everybody, and thank you again for listening.